You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you in votes. It is happening. Right? People are waking up. They're saying enough. In votes across Europe this weekend, working people sent a very clear message to the banksters who are choking them with shock doctrine, trickle-down Republican austerity. And that message was, no thanks, no more. In France, the socialist candidate, François Hollande, who campaigned against austerity, against basically the Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney agenda, defeated conservative President Nicolas Sarkozy in elections on Sunday. In his victory speech, Hollande told the French people that, quote, austerity can no longer be the only option, end quote. And he said that his mission is to now, quote, give the European project a dimension of growth, employment, prosperity, and a future, end quote. He says he's going to do that by undoing some of the austerity budget cuts. He's going to raise the minimum wage for French workers. This is going to put millions of euros into the French workers' pockets. He's going to hire tens of thousands of new teachers, again, creating a whole new, you know, bunch of consumers who are going to stimulate the economy. And he's going to pay for it all with a 75% tax. Now, keep in mind, we're debating whether or not to raise the tax on people like Mitt Romney, who make $10, $20, $30 million a year. Let them make their first $1 million at 15%. And then after that, they have to pay 30%. Right? We're debating that right now. That's the Buffett rule. Because right now, if you make $50 million, you know, you make $10, $20, $30 million like Mitt Romney, you pay a maximum 15% income tax. And in fact, the odds are that the year before last, or 3 years ago, you know, the tax release that Romney's refusing to release, probably he paid nothing in income taxes because there was that big recession, and he probably took some losses in his portfolio and moved those losses in to offset his taxes. So we're talking about somewhere between 0 and 15% what Mitt Romney pays right now, and Obama wants to raise that to 30%. Now, François Hollande, who was just elected president of France, says he's going to pay for raising the minimum wage and hiring tens of thousands of teachers by a new 75% tax on anyone who makes more than €1 million a year. That'd be about $1.6 million. Or at least, you know, the last time I looked at an exchange rate, which is probably 6 months or a year ago. At the same time, Hollande is promising to balance the French budget in 5 years. How is he going to do that? He's going to stimulate the economy by hiring these people and raising the minimum wage, short-term borrowing, long-term stimulus. And guess who's supporting him? Well, the Prime Minister of Belgium, the technocrat who's running Italy now and watching the Italian economy disintegrate. So what does this election in France mean for the strategy of Germany? Germany's basically the only country in Europe. I mean, sort of, you've got David Cameron going along with it in the UK. But basically, it's Germany pushing this thing because they're the wealthy bankers of Germany, and they're the ones who have been loaning, the principal source of loans to these various companies that have had to, or countries rather, that have had to borrow money to maintain their debt ratios and to keep their banks from failing. And so Germany is saying, hey, you know, cut your budget deficits. Have austerity. And the Germans don't much care if Spain goes down the tubes. I mean, hey, it's opportunities for German companies. It's the shock doctrine. Naomi Klein wrote a whole book about this. It's like the Germans read it and said, hey, we can do this for the rest of Europe. Actually, it wasn't so much like because the Germans didn't initiate it. They just were the ones who ended up in the position to say, okay, you know, if you want our money, here's the price. Kind of the way Mitt Romney did it when he ran Bain Financial. So anyhow, despite a clear electoral rebuke of austerity, Volker Kaudler, the conservative German parliament leader, he's tight buddies with Angela Merkel, he doubled down on austerity. This is the Germans. He said, quote, "The position of the German government is clear. We will continue on our savings path," end quote. But Merkel's conservative party in Germany, now she's the one driving this thing, they may be in trouble too, because on Sunday they had elections in Germany as well, and support for her coalition government fell. Now, these were all just local and regional elections, but just ahead of a crucial election in Germany's most populous state next week, they were seeing falls in some of the less populous states, meaning the anti-austerity wave sweeping Europe could conceivably topple Germany as well. And then there's what happened in Greece over the weekend. Greece is the nation arguably most ravaged. It's, you know, Spain, pretty bad, but Greece is even worse. They had elections on Sunday, and the two ruling parties, this would be like the Democratic Republican Party, right, supporting austerity. They together support it. They got 32% of the vote because the people were voting for the far left and the far right parties. And, in fact, they've got a far right party in Greece that won 6 or 8%, I forget which it is, of the vote, and, you know, a little less than 10%, but it's significant. And they dress in black shirts, and they've got a logo that looks startlingly like a swastika, both, according to them, just coincidences. And they ran ads, basically, that were anti-immigrant ads, saying they called them names, you know, like the filth and things, and said get them out of the country. But the main thing that they were running on wasn't so much, you know, trash the immigrants. I mean, that in their minds was a symptom of the problem. The main thing they were running on was stop the trickle-down austerity, stop giving, you know, stop bailing out the banks, and stop borrowing the money from the Germans to bail out the banks, and then wiping out the middle class of Greece to do it. So you got the rise of the left, the socialists, and the rise of the right, the Nazis. So now the future of Greece and the Eurozone, once again uncertain. And in large part because the Greek parliament, I mean, you know, there's next year. This year they already voted to borrow money from Germany and then give that to the banksters and pay that back in part by cutting benefits to their people and giving and skimming that money, taking money out of the hands, out of the mouths, out of the pockets of working Greeks and give that money to the banksters in Germany. But next year, when that vote comes back up again, financial analysts in Europe are looking at this thing and saying, no, I don't think it's going to happen. The financial analysts in Europe are putting the odds of a Greek exit from the euro at 75%, which is what Paul Krugman was saying, like, what, a year ago? And what I've been saying all along is that the EU, the euro, this common currency, was a mistake. I mean, keep in mind, right now, because of the common currency, Germany, France, Greece, they're kind of like the states in the United States. But they're trying to be far more independent. So anyhow, stay tuned. The battle between democracy and shock doctrine is just beginning. Brian Fisher, meanwhile, comes out. Brian's been on this show many times. He's a right-wing talk show host and American Family Association. He's the one who got Romney to basically shut up the openly gay foreign policy advisor. Here's what he had to say on this.
If Mitt Romney can be pushed around, intimidated, coerced, co-opted by a conservative radio talk show host in middle America, then how is he going to stand up to the Chinese? How is he going to stand up to Putin? How is he going to stand up to North Korea if he can be pushed around by a yokel like me? I mean, I don't think Romney's realizing kind of the doubts that this begins to raise about his leadership.
He's talking about himself as the yokel. Brian Fisher backed down Mitt Romney. Yeah, he's going to stand up to the Chinese really well, right? He's going to... Oh, come on. And yet still, Mitt Romney is in a dead heat with Obama in the swing states. Go figure. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey. Coming up next, what is going on with Joe Biden and gay rights?
All the world overside, is it a
Yeah, and speaking of being free, how about marriage equality? You know, it's like freedom. It seems like a good idea. We have passed the tipping point in the United States. Just like Canada passed it back, I think it was in 2005, Canada, the UK around that time, South Africa, Belgium, Spain, Mexico City. I mean, it's places all over the world are saying, hey, you know, gays can get married too. What's the big deal? And here in the United States, Joe Biden, this is clip six, Jacob, Joe Biden had this to say about it over the weekend.
I am Vice President of the United States of America. The president sets the policy. I am absolutely comfortable with the fact that men marrying men, women marrying women, and heterosexual men and women marrying men are entitled to the same exact rights, all the civil liberties. And quite frankly, I don't see much of a distinction beyond that.
Now, that's a pretty amazing thing to say on national television. And it raises the question, and I'm not seeing much speculation about this, frankly. Most people are treating this like, you know, Joe Biden is, you know, what's so refreshing about Joe Biden is he opens his mouth and he puts his foot in it. And I'm not sure that's the case. I don't think this was a matter, you know, and by putting his foot in it, of course, that's Washington speak for he tells a truth. And he does that a lot. And you could say, you know, that's a great thing, but I'm not so sure that that's the case of what's going on here. I think it's entirely possible that there's an enormous base and an increasingly well-organized base of gay people in the United States. And they control a lot of resources, including a lot of cash. And as the unions are declining as a funder of the Democratic Party, this is and on the Republican Party is looking at giant transnational corporations, international corporations. In fact, I want to rant about this in the second or third hour of the program. What the hell is going on when a company based in Leverkusen, Germany, and a company based in London in the United Kingdom, and a company based in Madrid, Spain, and a company based in Sydney, Australia, and a company based in Melbourne, Australia, are literally writing laws for the United States. These are members of the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, which has put together some pretty nasty anti-gay legislation, among other things, if my memory serves me right. And so anyhow, my thought on this is that Joe Biden probably didn't say that on national television by accident. And Nancy Pelosi is out saying that she thinks that this should be part of the Democratic platform. I would predict that between now and November, the president's going to come out in favor of gay marriage. Now, just a few hours ago, I was thinking with a fair level of certainty that he's not going to do this before November until after the elections, because he just, you know, politically can't. The right will go after him. But the more I look at this situation, the more I think about it, the more I'm, you know, one or the other is going to happen, right? Here's the reality. We are at the tipping point. In fact, as Joe Biden pointed out, it's when your social stories, when societies, when the cultural stories, when the media changes, then society changes. Or actually, I think it's the other way around. I think the media reflects the change in society, and then it becomes kind of a snowball going down the hill. But here's Joe Biden's comment on it.
When things really begin to change is when the social culture changes. I think Will and Grace probably did more to educate the American public than almost anything anybody's ever done so far. And I think people fear that which is different. Now they're beginning to understand.
Yeah. See, people get it. And they get it that gay people aren't that different from them. And that's his point. You know, they have the same concerns about jobs and relationships and food and, you know, it's just I all the basic stuff, right? Healthcare. I mean, it's just Arne Duncan, the education secretary, on Morning Joe this morning. He's now the second cabinet member to come out and say, yeah, gay marriage, good idea. Here he is.
Just a little icebreaker, Mr. Secretary. We're going to go through the whole cabinet. Do you believe that same-sex men and women should be able to get legally married in the United States?
Oh, come on. You're going to start there?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so have you ever said that publicly before?
I don't know if I've ever been asked publicly.
So there you go. You know, he says, yeah, I do. I do believe that, you know, that gays should have the right to get married. That's two cabinet members and the vice president. The pressure is building. Now, here's the question. If the president comes out for marriage equality before the election, is that going to net help him? Because so many people in America now have friends and family members who are openly gay and get it that they're not demons, right? That they're just people like the rest of us. Whereas, you know, 50 years ago, most gay people were hiding it. They were doing like Larry Craig and coming up with sham marriages, all this kind of stuff. But now, you know, there people are out. Right. So is that going to, if the president comes out in favor of gay marriage between now and November, is that going to help him with the middle, the swing voters? Keep in mind, Sarkozy lost in France. Hollande won by 4 points. That was the middle swinging. And if Obama's going to win, it's going to be the middle. So is the middle in America to the point where they're still buying into the homophobic notions? Or are they ready to say, yeah, okay. And a large part of that middle, frankly, is going to be the Hispanic vote, which is very Catholic and generally anti-gay marriage. And then there's the questions about in his base about the African-American vote, which is very often anti-gay marriage. What do you think?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
If you were President Obama, I mean, knowing that this is the direction the country's going, would you announce your support for gay marriage before or after the election? Welcome back to Talk Media for the Sane Among Us, the Tom Hartman Program, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Eh, amazing. Susan in Wana, Washington. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Always good to talk to you. I was kind of curious, and I do stand-up comedy, and maybe it's sick, but facetiously, but maybe because of his plate, like my cousin, maybe his plate's slipping. But why is it that Hillary Billery couldn't be a two-for-one and get the female side?
You know, I had suggested this almost a year ago that Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton should switch jobs because Joe Biden has tremendous expertise in international affairs. He was always really, really good. That was his strong suit. And Hillary Clinton would make a great vice president, and then she could run for president in 4 years. And the message that I'm hearing, Susan, from people who I know who know Hillary is that she's kind of had it and is ready to retire, and or at least not retire so much, but, you know, kind of get out of the government business and maybe do things like her husband is doing, philanthropic work and things like that, that she's really not interested in running for president. So,
but if she was public service, why doesn't she remain public service?
I think she intends to do that. Well, you know, I can't speak for her, and I don't know. And frankly, I've heard this from several people, but it still is in the category of rumor. But as I said, I don't disagree. I suggested that they switch places, but they haven't. And the president has made a commitment to Joe Biden as his vice president going into the convention, so it's not going to happen now. So, Susan, thank you for the call and the comments. From Susan to Susan in Traverse City, Michigan. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
As you were talking about the financial crisis in Europe and we're taking a look at the Olympics coming up in London, mm-hmm. I started thinking, as an athlete, I've watched the Olympics since I was very young. It seems that the economic fall of countries is assured by the fact that they've held the Olympics since modern day, actually since the 70s. When athletes were allowed to become corporate people and participate. And if you take a look at the corporate involvement in the Olympics, certainly Greece and Spain, as well as some of the other countries in Europe, as well as South America, have suffered financially in the decades that follow. And I'm wondering if perhaps it's because of the investments they had to pour into a two-week event in their country and support from a global standpoint, and the involvements of the World Bank and banksters.
It's interesting. I wonder, do you remember which year it was that Mitt Romney ran the Olympics in Salt Lake City?
That was in the 90s.
Yeah, I don't recall which year it was, but it would be interesting to know to what extent things might have changed as a consequence of that. That's the kind of thing that Lee Fong would, you know, with the Republic Report, would dig up. But I think, you know, the commercialization of the Olympics has been a very bad trend, just like, frankly, the commercialization of everything else. You know, now our schools are being – anything that, you know, private spaces, airports, public stadiums, I mean, you name it. If you can slap a corporate logo on it and squeeze a little money out of a corporation for it, or a corporation can put a little money and get a lot of advertising as a result, it's happening, and I think it's a bad thing. Susan, thanks for the call, and excellent point. Well said. Ronald in Chicago. Hey, Ronald. Thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Hey, my mother explained something to me about gay marriage, and her point was this. If you have a long-time couple that's been together, say the family disagreed with the arrangement, and they decide that, you know, one of them get terminally ill, then they may decide that the other partner has no right to see the partner because they're not married. But if they marry, they would have a right, you know, to have access to that partner.
That's right.
If they're sick.
And to inherit. This is the thing that, and you put your finger right on it, Ronald, and thank you so much for doing so. The thing about marriage is not the, oh, we can live happily forever for after and ride into the sunset and hold hands and kiss. The thing about marriage is that you can make medical decisions for each other. You can inherit money. You can own things jointly. You can make, you know, financial decisions. I mean, marriage is a contract. And it's a contract not just between two people, but between two people and a whole bunch of other entities that those two people decide to contract with. Banks for mortgages, banks for credit cards, the government for student loans, you know, on and on and on it goes. There's a reason why marriage is, you know, is largely civil, frankly. So, anyhow, Joe in Chicago. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind?
Yes, Tom, answering that question about whether or not the president should come out in favor of gay marriage, I would say he absolutely should, for the following moral and political reasons. Number one, simply enough, it's morally right. We all know it is.
Yep.
But politically, the people who are going to vote against him or who will not vote for him already think he's for gay marriage.
I know, particularly after what his vice president.
Or the other. Yeah. There are many, many people in the lesbian, gay, transgender community who are quite upset that he has not come out for them and may not at all or may even vote against him because he hasn't done it. Mm-hmm. So I think that if he does come out, he'll, you know, they make up, gay people make up, they think, anywhere from 10 to 15% of the population.
Yeah.
So that's a lockjaw on, you know, a huge, quite a large voting block, and I think it's a no-brainer, frankly.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you very much, Joe, for the call. I agree. The flip side of that, I mean, this is sort of like we're debating whether or not Lyndon Johnson should have signed the Civil Rights Act. You know, but anyhow, Tom in Seattle. Hey, Tom, what's up? Tom?
Yeah.
Hey, you're on the air.
Sorry about that. Hey, a couple things. First, I'm an old white guy. I'm a professor at a couple three universities. I'm a Christian. And I think that if we made a list of what the 1% uses in terms of government support and the rest of us use, they got like 90%. So you think about things like, you name it, like laws and lawyers and highways and
public education, or an educated workforce. Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking more like even day to day.
I mean, the 1%, you know, run the businesses, and those businesses wouldn't exist if they didn't have an educated workforce.
That's true, but I don't know a lot of homeless people that, you know, want to hire tax attorneys or patent attorneys, do you?
Sure. I mean, no, I don't. And the vast majority of activity in our courts in the United States, more than 50%, is corporate. It is not criminal.
I teach a law class at two universities up here in Seattle, and I'm thinking, well, let's see, do the 1% use it most, or do the rest of us?
Right.
So you know what you got to do. Get one of your staff guys, just publish a list of what do the 1% use in terms of government service versus people making under $30,000.
Yeah, it's been done. David K. Johnston has done that math, and it's in one of his books. And I've interviewed him a number of times on this show. I don't have the stats in front of me, but he has them off the top of his head. But they're there. They're out there. And I encourage you to just Google David K. Johnston with a T. Or check out his books in your local bookstore or online or whatever, because it's there. Tom, thanks a lot for the call. Well said. Matt in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Global warming. But other than that,
you're right. Hey, that's a better answer than the old not me. Got any loco weed? The old Fireside Theater comeback. Anyway,
I think that's the new thing. But anyway, the reason why I called is because Republicans in the State House of Missouri have introduced a bill called "Don't Say Gay," which, if passed, it would be illegal for teachers in public schools K through 12 to simply use the word "gay," not only in sex education, but in, let's say, history class.
Right.
So, the Orwellian overtones. My point is this. Legalize gay marriage now. If you do that, it'll take the weapon out of the Republicans' hand that they use to vilify and demonize average defenseless Americans who just happen to have been born gay. I think now's the time.
Yeah, to some extent, it'll take that weapon out of their hands. I mean, the passing the Civil Rights Act didn't stop the KKK. They're still around. And, bigotry and hatred will endure. But I believe that you're absolutely right and very well said. Reuben in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Reuben, we have just a minute to the break. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to let you know that I'm doing my patriotic job here as a chronic unemployed painter.
Okay.
The new list that Common Cause came out with.
Yes, we're going to get into that later in the program.
Yeah, I'm actually going through the list and contacting them either by phone or by email. And not too good of a response. They just, they don't really know what to say, but
most
of them take note and...
But yeah, and when you call them, if you call 1-800-CONTACTS or Allergan or Alitra Client Services or Amazon.com or American Electric Power Company or Amerigroup, or that's just the A's, right? The beginning of the A's in this list of ALEC corporate members. What's going to happen is you're going to get a secretary, basically, say a telephone answerer who has no power. But they can take note of your call and they will record it and they'll pass it along. So it's a good thing to be doing. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The complete list of corporations that are members of ALEC, by the way, has been published by Common Cause. There's a link to it over at TomHartman.com, or there will be shortly. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. John in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, John. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
So I was thinking about this, Tom, and I realize, Article 5 of the Constitution, right?
Let me refresh my memory by pulling it up. Let me hear it.
Article 5 of the Constitution basically says there's two ways.
Oh, rights in criminal cases. No, that's Amendment 5. I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead.
Two ways to amend. You can either
the
Senate and the Congress, or you need two-thirds of the states, and then you can form an Article 5 convention, which Thomas Jefferson knew was very important because he formed the Constitution from a convention.
Right.
So the way I see it, these ALEC bringing legislation directly to the it's unconstitutional because if we need two-thirds of the several states to say, to be in agreement to form a convention, to pass amendments up to the Congress.
To the federal
these
constitution.
These companies have no constitutional right to be doing doing this?
Well, here's how they're getting through that. First of all, to the best of my knowledge, ALEC hasn't proposed any federal constitutional amendments. And what you're talking about is, you know, an Article 5 convention to amend the federal constitution, the U.S. Constitution. Instead, ALEC has focused almost all of their attention on the various states. And so they're writing laws that are being introduced into state legislatures and an occasion, presumably, ballot measures or constitutional amendments that are being introduced into the states. But the, you know, they don't, I don't think that they run afoul of Article 5. I think if anything, what ALEC is doing is running afoul of IRS rules. IRS rules say, you know, that if you're going to be a 501c3, if corporations that give money to you are going to take a tax deduction for that money, then, you know, your purposes have to be educational. You can't be a lobbying organization. And lobbying organizations can't, you know, if you give money to a lobbying organization, you can't deduct that contribution. And ALEC is running as a 501c3, I believe. And corporations are taking tax deductions for giving them money. And I don't think it should be tax deductible, my personal opinion.
So what do you think about a convention at this point? Because I read that every year there's up to 3,000 applications for such a thing, and that we've had 2/3 of the states on board before, but never been able to get one.
I think having this is where I disagree with some of my friends and colleagues in the amend the Constitution movement. There are some of them out there calling for a constitutional convention, and I think that that's the most dangerous thing we could do right now, given how much power corporations have and rich people have in the United States right now. Mm. It would be to crack open the Constitution and have people tinkering with it. I think that one specific amendment, which says corporations aren't people and money is not speech, is the way to go. And that then has to get, you know, 2/3 of the House and Senate and 3/4 of the states to go for it. And I think it's possible. I really do think that it's possible. Chuck in Winterport, Maine. Hey, Chuck, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Tom, thank you so much for being online. This is the first time that I've been able to speak this out loud. My father was gay, and I'm thankful that I had him as a father. So I'm in a very confused situation about this gay equality thing. Mm-hmm. If it had been totally legal, I might not have been born. On the other hand, he married to move upwards, but he had to keep his sexuality completely in the closet, and which enabled him for a while to progress to very high levels in government. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, he was very angry at me personally. I don't know if you've gotten a call like this or
no, I haven't. He was very angry at you because you were because he wasn't anticipating having children when he got into this sham marriage.
No, I think he anticipated having children, but he wanted to rise in a social structure. Mm. But he was angry because he couldn't express himself to me or to anyone. He had to keep it very, very deep in the closet.
Sure. That anger
not only to
is
me, but to his government, but to keep his government positions.
Sure, that is the reflection of the great wound that he suffered by our society, and some people express, you know, when they're wounded, some people express it with, you know, anger. Some people express it, you know, by shutting down. Some people express it by getting very, very active. Some people express it, actually, by getting healthier. I mean, you know, the Kauai study on abused children showed that. There is a significant cohort who become actually more resilient as the result of you know, having painful experiences through childhood. And, you know, it's just every individual responds to these things differently. And the good news, and Chuck, you may well have been born to him. You just might have had two dads, and you might have been, you know, born via a surrogate mother.
No, don't go that way.
Who might have been your real mom, you know, but who knows? I mean, I don't have any idea, and I'm not going to...
No, he was my father. I know he's my father, and I love him, and I've inherited so much from him in my world outlook, in his internationalist perspective, because he traveled around the world as a government official.
Yeah, but it's such a... It's so sad that he was...
They finally caught him in a gay bash in 1953 in Paris.
Oh, really?
And then he could never... and then he never again could get a government position.
Oh, that's sad. And that's, you know, that's the...
He was a lovely man.
Yeah. That's the tragedy that we need to stop from happening anymore.
Yes.
Right? We need to...
I don't know how we do that, but
your
program helps.
We do that by recognizing gay people as every bit as human as everybody else, and
right.
every bit as part of the human family as everybody
right.
else. And recognizing that if they fall in love with others and they want to get married and they want the legal protections associated with that, that they fully have those.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the United States is a laggard in this. I mean, Canada did this a long time ago. The Great Britain did this a long time ago. South Africa did this a long time ago. It's happening all over the world. It's time for us to get with the program. Chuck, thank you for sharing your story with us. Thanks again for watching Free Speech TV. We will be back. Tom Hartman here with you. This ALEC list is quite amazing. Oh, and by the way, Dustin Stockton is going to come by, the chief strategist for the TeaParty.net, and tell us all about the Republican moderates and how they need to be purged.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. But Arnold Schwarzenegger writing an op-ed. It's time for Republicans who are so bent on enforcing conformity to ask themselves a question. What would Ronald Reagan have done? What would Ronald Reagan have done? Dustin Stockton with the Tea Party, theteaparty.net is on the line with us. Dustin is the chief strategist for the teaparty.net. Hey, Dustin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on. I've actually been listening for a long time back from my days in Eugene, Oregon. So
great.
It's a pleasure to be on today.
Thank you. I'm curious your thoughts on this op-ed by Arnold Schwarzenegger in which he's basically saying that the party is doing these purges. We're going to see it today in all probability or tomorrow with Richard Lugar being kicked out in Indiana by a Tea Partier. And,
right.
and you know, the party basically lurching so hard to the, and it's not even the right anymore, it's so embracing the agenda of transnational corporations and billionaires that average Republicans feel like there's no place left for them anymore.
Well, see, I think this is where we have a fundamental disagreement about what's happening. So I've been involved in the Tea Party movement, basically from the very beginning. I don't necessarily see the Tea Party movement as the lurch to the right that you see it as on across the board issues. In fact, having listened to you for so long, I think we have more agreements than you would anticipate on the role of these corporations and transnationals inside the power of government. I think the Tea Party is looking inside the Republican Party at people like Dick Lugar, who have done the bidding of those corporations. And we're removing them with people who are more intelligent and will be able to, who haven't been in Washington so long that they won't see that corruption for what it is. The Tea Party movement,
Dustin, when you look at the Tea Party Republicans, the freshman class of Tea Party Republicans, there's what, 80, 90 of them, something like that in the House of Representatives. They've taken more money from corporations and particularly from big banks than the Republicans did before them.
Right. Well, a lot of that skewed by people who are no longer very friendly with the Tea Party. People, I know Scott Brown in Massachusetts.
I'm talking about the House of Representatives. He's in the Senate.
Sure. But the point is that we came in, and the message that we had was co-opted by people who didn't have the best agendas. Now, there are a lot of really good Tea Party freshman congressmen.
Name one.
Alan West.
Alan
Raul
West.
Labrador in Idaho. I think Raul Labrador is an outstanding congressman.
Okay, and have you checked to see where he's getting his money from?
I haven't seen his FEC report, though.
Okay. I would strongly suggest that you take a look at that. I think you would be shocked.
Sure.
That's the tragedy of Washington, D.C., is to a large extent, particularly if you're a Republican, if you want to get reelected, you've got to toe the corporate line. But this is why I said that you guys are doing the works of billionaires and transnational corporations, even if your rhetoric or even your beliefs are that we shouldn't have an oligarchy in the United States. When you guys say things like, let's get government out of the way with things like, for example, regulations, let's do away with the EPA. What you're saying then is we're going to turn our air and water over to transnational corporations. When you say things like, let's get government, out of the way of, or let's have lower taxes, what you're saying, the average working person's not going to see anything lower taxes. What you're saying is let's make sure that Mitt Romney can continue paying 15%. And
can I take these one at a time?
Sure.
So I don't forget
go for
where
it.
We're at.
Yeah.
Let's start with taxes. So taxes, right? We're not necessarily advocating for lower taxes. What we're advocating for is a simplified tax code, because we believe that having a 80,000 plus page tax code is the language of corruption that manipulates the free market. So
but that simplified tax code ends up being like a flat tax, which means, I mean, Mitt Romney's plan, the proposal that Mitt Romney has put forward would cause people who make less than $65,000 a year to pay a lot more in taxes, and people who make over $200,000 a year pay a lot less in taxes. How is that to the benefit of any working person, Tea Party or not?
Well, the benefit would be from revenue, because the people who are paying, right, you want to raise the top marginal tax rate.
That's correct.
My problem with raising the top marginal tax rate under the current system is that guys who work 20 hours a day or, 80 hours a week and make $150,000, their taxes are going to go up.
The buffer rule that Obama's proposing is raising taxes after you've earned $1 million a year on your million and first dollar. And before that, what he was proposing was on people who make over and for Social Security, he's proposing for over $250,000 a year.
Yes.
And frankly, I think if you're earning $250,000 a year or you're earning $1 million a year, and we're talking about having you pay an additional 4% in Social Security or a maximum of 30%, I don't think you're going to be hurt by that, frankly.
Sure, but the problem is that the people who you want to target are going to have somebody like Dick Lugar insert a loophole for him into the tax code. And so when you have an 80,000-page tax code, raising the marginal tax rate right now isn't going to be effective on anybody but the working class. And that number of...
So wait a minute. Your logic here is...
Around a what?
Your logic here is let's not raise taxes on rich people because they'll figure a way around it. Aren't you surrendering before you even fight the war?
No, the war... Right, you're fighting the wrong battle, in my opinion. So,
well, why should Mitt Romney pay 14.9% on $22 million worth of income when in the state of Wisconsin, a firefighter and a teacher together are paying more than 20% in federal income taxes?
Well, I think that's a fair question. Part of it is the investment income incurs risk.
Why should we have that? Why should people who make their money using money pay a maximum tax rate of 15%, whereas people who make their money teaching people or saving lives or using the sweat of their arm or the sweat of their minds, the power of their minds, why should those people pay 35%?
Well, the reason that 15% is a different number is not all investments work, and you're incurring a lot of risk, and we want to encourage investment into private industry.
The way you encourage investment is you allow people to carry forward losses. If investments don't work, that's a loss. You can offset that against your taxes. It was Ronald Reagan who said that the dividend rate and interest rate should be the same as the earned income rate, and he actually equalized them for 1 year. They were both 28%, and I think it was 86, might have been 87. And he came out and said, he said it's stupid. That was his word, or crazy.
Right.
That a bus driver should pay more taxes than a millionaire.
Right. I'm all for GE paying their fair share of taxes.
I'm talking about Mitt Romney, not GE.
Sure, sure. But the point is that the under the current tax code, I see Tea Party people every day fighting to make the tax code more simple, more fair, and more understandable.
But see, those are the buzzwords that are used by the billionaires who want a flat tax, who want to do what Romney's doing and, quote, simplify the taxes so that people who make less than $60,000 pay more in income taxes and people like him pay less in income taxes.
Well, see, we're having an intelligent discussion on this, right? Which is the problem is the media soundbites it into simple things. So when you were talking about regulation earlier, this is another point, which is no reasonable Tea Partiers really want to just end regulations. For example, I want Glass-Steagall back. I want to break up the big national mega bank.
Wow, I'm impressed. Dustin, I'm going to have to leave you with the last word on that point. Dustin Stockton, theteaparty.net.
I'll do this again.
Thanks, Dustin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, that was fascinating. We'll be back with your thoughts on our thoughts on that and the list of Alec corporations after this.
Don't let the smooth talk fool you. Don't let the sharks deter you. Don't let them small minds out there on prime time make it sharp out of you, baby. Don't let the smooth talk fool you.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Gary in Cottonwood, Arizona. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Just had a real brief comment just to kind of let you know about this question of corporate personhood and how corporations are people and speech is money is speech. Well, there's one condition that I would believe that whole thing where the corporations are people, and that would be if Texas executes one.
You know, they used to.
They did? Corporations?
Yeah, there used to be a death penalty for corporations. No, I'm not kidding. And in fact, on average, about 2,000 times a year up until the 1880s, the corporate death penalty was pulled on a corporation in one of the various states. And Texas was one of the states that did this. And they did was it's called dissolving the corporate charter. And there were laws in the books that said that if a corporation misbehaves, its charter will be dissolved. Its assets are sold at auction. And the stockholders lose everything, and you know the corporation dies, and so there is a legal mechanism for a corporate death penalty, and I'm absolutely with you I think the cliche or the bumper sticker of I'll believe a corporation's a person when Texas executes one really highlights the point, not so much that corporations need to be put out of business, which is it's the corporate death penalty, but that they're not living, breathing beings, and therefore they're not entitled to constitutional rights.
Right.
And, yeah, well
Beautiful.
Said. Gary, thank you very much. In fact, there's this amazing Wisconsin law, and I don't see a copy of Unequal Protection. It's over there. I'll have to grab it and find it and read it for you. I'll do it after the break, in the next hour. I've read this before, this Wisconsin law on the air, and it's an example of laws that were in all the states. And so, I will share that with you after the bottom of the hour. It is the essence of the law that we need to bring back in the United States. This is really what we need to be having here. Dave in Kansas City, Kansas. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hello, Tom. You mentioned a while ago that some outfit give all of the corporate names.
Yeah.
That were members of ALEC.
Yes, sir.
I was thinking, and I've been on my representatives and senators about being members of ALEC.
Mm-hmm.
I'm living in Kansas, and the Koch brothers are out of Wichita. So,
right.
Is there a way that the voters of the United States can get a list that tells them whether their representatives and senators are a member of ALEC, to where we can call or write them and demand that they quit?
I'm not sure. I would check the websites of Common Cause, Republic Report, and Think Progress and see. But I'm pretty sure that there has not yet been published a list of all the legislative members. We do have now, for the very first time, this was published by Common Cause last week, a list of all the corporate members. And they include what I find really interesting about this. Keep in mind, this is an organization that writes laws And then where the corporation, the lobbyists for the corporation sit down with legislators from all over the states, mostly Republicans, and probably by the end of this year it'll be exclusively Republicans because the Democrats are leaving in hordes, and there weren't that many to begin with. They were a very small fraction, Democratic members of ALEC. And so it's basically an organization where corporations and their lobbyists sit down with Republican members of state houses and state assemblies and state senates, and they write laws, and then those people go back and introduce those laws. And AstraZeneca is one of the companies that's a member, and they're headquartered out of London in the UK. Bayer is a member of, in American, it's in English, it's pronounced Bayer. In Germany, yeah. It's Bayer. They're based in Leverkusen, Germany. Sintra is a member, of ALEC. They're based in Madrid, Spain. GlaxoSmithKline, based in London, UK. Macquarie Capital is based in Sydney, Australia. The question, Transurban is based in Melbourne, Australia. These are companies that are not American companies that are writing American laws.
I know.
Isn't this wrong?
Well, my thing is, we have no control over them. We've got no leverage over them. If we knew who our representatives and senators and what have you were,
yeah,
we could have some leverage over them. We can demand that they get out, or we vote them out.
Yeah, and I think increasingly, what you're going to see as we go into this election cycle is that many Democrats who are running against Republicans who are ALEC members are going to be using the ALEC membership of that Republican against them in campaign ads. Hopefully, you know, we'll see how that plays out. Dave, thank you for the call. But just this whole concept of this is why I've been saying for a long time that I believe personally that Ahmadinejad is helping fund Karl Rove's Global GPS. He's gotten these $10 million donations that he refuses to reveal. Now, keep in mind, Iran always benefits from Republican administrations. Reagan, the first Republican, you know, ever since the Shah fell during the Carter administration and Iran became hostile to the United States, Reagan sold them weapons illegally during the Reagan administration. During the Clinton administration, Halliburton, which was run by a man named Dick Cheney, illegally sold things that, you know, aluminum tubes that could be used to make centrifuges, nuclear centrifuges and things, and other equipment, sensitive equipment, illegally sold them to Iran. Dick Cheney did. During the Bush administration, George Bush took out Iran's biggest enemy, an enemy that they fought a almost 10-year-long war against, spent billions of dollars, lost a million people. Saddam Hussein was the number one enemy of Iran. And George Bush took him out, did a huge favor to Iran, gave them enormous influence in the region. I think they're funding Karl Rove.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And thus, they're funding Mitt Romney and Republicans all over the country. Because, of course, I mean, if AstraZeneca and Bayer can be funding ALEC, then Ahmadinejad can fund Karl Rove.
Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Occupying the media here on the Tom Hartman Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no way, not a chance, not even possible. Which reminds me, hang on just a second. I was going to read you a law, and the book was still on the shelf there. It's going to take me just a second to find it, but this is going to be worth the wait, because this law... WIS, Wisconsin, page 312. This is, I'm looking in my book, Unequal Protection. And page 97. Here we go. Okay, it's on page 97 of Unequal Protection. And this was the law. This particular one comes via Janie Ann Morris from the state of Wisconsin. And this was on the books in Wisconsin from early on, you know, from whenever Wisconsin became a state back in the 19th century until, or maybe the late 18th, I doubt. I think it's the early 19th century or the mid-19th century. Until sometime in, I think it was 1956 or 54, they discovered that it was still there and they took it off. But it basically hadn't been enforced since the 20s. But this is the kind of law that every state in the nation had on their books until an era in the late 1890s that is referred to as the charter-mongering era happened, when basically John D. Rockefeller, who was at that time living in Ohio, he had Standard Oil of Ohio, and the state attorney general for Ohio said, we're going to prosecute you for violating the antitrust laws. You are not behaving in the interest of the community. And so Rockefeller said, okay, what state will allow me to operate in their state? And all of a sudden, this bidding war started among the states to drop their standards and do away with corporate charter laws like the one I'm going to read to you in just a second. And the result of that was the least restrictive state right now is Delaware. In Delaware, you can incorporate with a single sentence, article, statement of purpose in your article of incorporation, and a single member on your board of directors, which is why more than half of all the companies listed on the New York Stock Exchange are Delaware corporations. No dummies them. Okay, so anyhow, this is the old Wisconsin law, and it was on virtually every state. It said the same thing. No, it's about political contributions by corporations. This is how states kept politics from being corrupted. No corporation doing business in this state shall pay or contribute or offer consent or agree to pay or contribute directly or indirectly any money, property, free service of its officers or employees, or thing of value to any political party, organization, committee, or individual for any political purpose whatsoever, or for the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind, or to promote or defeat the candidacy of any person for nomination, appointment, or election to any political office. And then penalty. Now, keep in mind, back in the 19th century, $5,000 was like maybe $5 million today. Okay, I mean, there's been a massive debasement of our currency. Well, maybe more like $500,000, but whatever. So it was a lot of money. Penalty. Any officer, employee, agent, or attorney, or other representative. See, this banned lobbying. Or any other representative of any corporation acting for and in behalf of such corporation who shall violate this act shall be punished upon conviction by a fine of not less than $100 nor more than $5,000 or by imprisonment in the state prison for a period of not less than one nor more than 5 years or by both such fine and imprisonment in the discretion of the court or judge before whom such conviction is had. And if the corporation shall be subject to a penalty, then by forfeiture in double the amount of any fine, and if a domestic corporation, in other words, if that corporation is chartered in this state, it may be dissolved. If after a that's the corporate death penalty. If after a proper proceeding upon quo warranto in either the circuit or Supreme Court of the state to be prosecuted by the Attorney General of the state, the court shall find and give judgment that Section 1 of this Act has been violated as charged, and if a foreign or resident corporation, okay, so if it's a domestic corporation, if it's a Wisconsin state corporation, it can be dissolved. It gets the corporate death penalty. If it's an out-of-state corporation, its right to do business in this state may be declared forfeit. That's what we need to bring back. But right now, the Supreme Court has said that that kind of a law is unconstitutional. Because corporations are people, don't you know? It's pretty amazing when you think about it. Pretty amazing. David in Chicago. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi, I wanted to, first of all, Danica Patrick, better start looking over your shoulder for Jolene and the toilet racing there. But anyway, on a more serious note, a recent example I wanted to bring out was, didn't Arthur Anderson a county basically get the death penalty involved with their Enron?
Yeah, they got dissolved. My recollection is that they got hit with a fine that exceeded their assets, but I might be wrong on that. But yeah, they went out of business. As
according to Wikipedia, the firm voluntarily surrendered its licenses to practice as a CPA certified public accountants in the United States after being found guilty of criminal charges related to the auditing. But I want to get one of the things that really bothers me about our political and many of our business elites in this country is that I see a total lack of stewardship to our sovereignty, and integral to that sovereignty is what it means to be an American citizen under the 14th Amendment, living and working in our country. They're giving all these rights under the 14th Amendment to corporations. You know, when it comes to real live people working in our country, the 14th Amendment has no value or meaning at all, because foreign workers can be brought in and can legally displace American citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So I see a real perversion of the 14th Amendment being applied differently to corporations as opposed to real life people trying to find good paying jobs in our country.
Yeah, corporations are super persons. They can live forever. They don't have to go through probate. They don't have an inheritance tax. Again, it used to be that corporations couldn't live more than 40 years. There was no state in the union that allowed a corporation. Some states it was 30 years, some states it was 20 years, most states it was 40 years. No state allowed a corporation to live more than 40 years. And then they had to dissolve and reboot, basically. And that way you couldn't aggregate massive wealth and capital in a single corporate form, so a single corporation couldn't grow so large and powerful that it could influence government. These were ways of preventing the corruption of government by corporate power. And that got done away with in the 1890s as well, during the Charter Bond.
Wasn't it true that after the 1886 Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific, that close to like 70 or 80% of the cases under the 14th Amendment, or that during the next 25, 30-year period, like 60 to 70%, if not 80% of the cases, had to deal with corporations and nothing to do at all with real people, let alone slaves who were really covered under the 14th Amendment?
Yeah, let me, I'm looking for the exact quote. Hugo Black, 2454, I think it is. Yeah, here, Justice Hugo Black pointed out, that's not the right one, 2454. Hang on just a minute. Yeah, here. This is Justice Hugo Black. In 1938, he said, of the cases in this court in which the 14th Amendment was applied during the first 50 years after its adoption, less than one-half of 1% invoked it in protection of the Negro race, and more than 50% asked that its benefits be extended to corporations.
And
that's a justice of the Supreme Court, 1938.
Yeah, and I actually heard a number, and I can't remember, but it was something from 1886 to like 1910, something like all but like a small percentage had to do with corporations because of the way that opened up the floodgates. But yeah, it's interesting that he supports that even over a larger period. But we have to really go back to the stewardship issue, stewardship of our sovereignty. And integral to that sovereignty, the 14th Amendment, real-life people living and working in our country. And I think we really need to start asking the right questions. And frankly, I think anybody that's been, since wages have been flat for the last 30 years in our country, we really have to look at these people who have been in Congress for the last 25 to 30 years and say, you know what, we see a correlation here. Maybe you need to get a new career or retire because you aren't doing the job.
It depends on the person. You know, Bernie Sanders has not been taking money from these big corporations.
That's true.
Dennis Kucinich wasn't taking money from those people, although they managed to, you know, reorganize his district, and get him out.
Badly.
But there's some good people out there who are supported by the people, by and large. And it's just that you have to be in a really, really strong district, and it's a tough one. Carl, David, thank you very much for the call. Rob in Milwaukee, you want to make a really quick point about ALEC Exposed?
Yes, you were talking about a list of legislators that and state senators. ALEC Exposed has list on their page.
Oh, they do. ALECExposed.org.
They do.
Is that Robert Greenwald's site?
I believe so.
Yeah, Robert is doing such great work. I didn't realize the entire list was out there. I will have to go check that during the break.
I know Robin Voss and Alberta Darling are the heads for the state of Wisconsin, and then Scott Walker actually used to be a member when he was in the legislature here.
Surprise, surprise! Yeah. Okay, Rob, thank you very much. ALEC Exposed, I'm on my way, .org. I do appreciate that, and thanks for listening to WCPT. We'll be back 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We're going to check in with the Talk Radio News Service and find out what's going on in the rest of the world here in just a few minutes. And then back with more about that. I'm going to start sharing this list with you, ALEC members.
You got no time for the messenger. Got no regard for the thing that you don't understand. You got no fear of the underdog. That's why you will not survive.
Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Victoria Jones in the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Hey, Victoria, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Quite a lot today. The White House would not say today whether President Obama's views on gay marriage have changed, except to say the president, this is Jay Carney in the briefing that I attended earlier, president is the right person to describe his own personal views. He, as you know, said that his views on this were evolving, and I don't have an update for you on that. This, of course, a big issue today. There may have been 20, 30 questions, all resulting because yesterday Vice President Joe Biden said he's absolutely comfortable with men marrying men and women marrying women. And then today, Education Secretary Arne Duncan said in answer to a direct question that he believes same-sex marriages should be legal.
So here's the question, Victoria.
Yes.
Is this White House so bad at messaging, or is Joe Biden so out of control that on a major policy issue like this, they would come out and say something that directly contradicts the president and could conceivably harm him going into the election? Or is this White House so slick and so smart about these kinds of things that they're laying down the trial balloons and they're laying down the foundation so that when the president comes out in the next month or two or three and says, yes, I support gay marriage, marriage equality, maybe part of the Democratic Party platform, and we will work toward that if I'm reelected, he's done it. I'm inclined to think that he's going to endorse marriage equality before the election. And it's a position I've only come to in the last few hours. I mean, literally this morning when I was going through these news stories, I was thinking, this is a mess. But is the White House possibly that incompetent that they could just have this mess?
I think both things are possibly true.
Okay.
I mean, not at the same time, but both things could be true.
Yeah.
David Axelrod, senior campaign strategist, said on a conference call with reporters this morning that Biden's comments were entirely consistent with the president's position, which is that couples who are married, whether they're gay or heterosexual couples, are entitled to the very same rights and very same liberties. So that, of course, you know.
But that means doing away with DOMA at the very least.
Yes, which, of course, they've stopped defending.
Right. So he's already on record as saying if your state makes it legal, it should be legal, and we're not going to use the Defense of Marriage Act any longer.
Exactly. But I think it's either one of these things is possible. They are certainly capable of being this slick. I mean, they're spending $25 million on ad buys in May alone because they don't want Romney to define the president.
Right.
So they are very much on the ball. On the other hand, Vice President Biden is a law unto himself.
Yeah, I've noticed. So we shall see. We'll see how this plays out. And if you had to bet, do you think that President Obama will come out in favor of gay marriage before the election? Or, I mean, it's inevitable. It's more than half of the American electorate is in favor of it now. Or will he wait until after the election? Is he concerned that this is going to harm him with at least those two slices of his base/constituency who tend not to favor by a majority a gay marriage, which is African Americans and Latinos?
I think he's concerned about them, although they're overwhelmingly going to vote for them, for him. I think he's also concerned about any kind of furor in swing states and conservative Democrats or independents who might be on the fence and it might push them over one way or the other. I think he's going to try and resist coming out.
Yeah, okay. See, that was my original theory. Maybe I'll go back to my original theory.
I could be wrong. I find him very difficult to read. I'm like Genevieve Cook, you know.
Okay. Indeed.
An awkward moment occurred at Mitt Romney's town hall event in Cleveland, Ohio today.
Mm-hmm.
An audience member in the process of asking him a question said, we have a president right now that's operating outside the structure of our Constitution, applause, and I want to know, yeah, I do agree he should be tried for treason, but I want to know what you'd be able to do to restore balance, blah, blah, blah. So Romney immediately said, well, as I'm sure you do, I happen to believe the Constitution was not just brilliant, but probably inspired. I happen to believe the same thing about the Declaration of Independence, and on he went. He did not address treason at all.
He didn't at least have the good graces that John McCain had when that woman famously said to him, "Ed Obama, he's an Arab." And McCain said, "No, ma'am, he's not an Arab. I disagree with him, but he's a good man. He's a Christian. He's not an Arab."
No.
Mitt Romney didn't even have the common courtesy, common decency that John McCain did to correct this man who called the president of the United States a traitor.
No. When he was asked by the Washington Post and the New York Times afterwards about the incident, I don't correct all of the questions that get asked of me. It's kind of a biggie. Obviously, yeah. I don't agree that he should be tried.
Which still doesn't say he doesn't believe that the president is committing treason.
Thank you. That's what I've been walking around saying for an hour.
Amazing.
And
amazing.
He let it go in public.
And this man wants to be president of the United States.
Yes, and that's what the Obama campaign is saying, which is, if this is the leadership he's shown on the campaign trail, what can the American people expect of him as commander-in-chief?
Right. Imagine this guy trying to negotiate a peace between the Israelis and the Arabs, or the missile situation with Poland and Russia, or, I mean, fill in the blanks, right? Any kind of delicate situation where you have to be careful about what you're saying and how you're dealing with people. It's, wow. Wow. Talk about the 3 a.m. phone call.
Yeah,
Mitt Romney, foot in mouth. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you very much.
Great talking with you. Always great talking with you. Brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. I want to share with you this Bank of America. Did you know the Bank of America is an ALEC member? If you're a Bank of America customer, you might want to mention that to the teller next time you visit.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, so I'm looking at this story over at rawstory.com. Study: dinosaurs may have caused extinction with flatulence. Giant dinosaurs that roamed the earth millions of years ago may have warmed the planet with the gas they produced from eating leafy plants. Farted themselves to death? I suppose it's possible. We're doing it by burning oil, and the oil is those plants that they were chowing down back in the day, so could it be? Meanwhile, ExxonMobil has 800 shows for last year. The numbers are out. Forbes is publishing them. $825 billion. That's with a B. $825 billion. That's not the revenue. That's not the amount of money that went through the corporation. That's their profit. That's what's left over at the end of the day. $825 billion. With a B. That's $825,000 million. $1 million, 825,000 times. And you wonder why your gas price is so high? You could just ask ExxonMobil. And you wonder why it's so hard to get any kind of laws passed that might have anything to do with the oil industry? Let's see, ExxonMobil. Let me look at my ALEC list here. Oh, there it is, ExxonMobil Corporation, based out of Texas. And not only are they members of ALEC, but they, you know, ALEC has these committees. I think committee is the, no, they call them task force. They have these task force forces, and these task forces meet to write the laws in these in their particular areas of expertise that are then given to Republican legislators to take into their state legislatures and, you know, put on the floor for consideration. And ExxonMobil Corporation sits on the Civil Justice Task Force. They sit on the Energy Task Force. Surprise! They sit on the Environment Task Force. Oh, yes, let's pass some laws that make life better for ExxonMobil with their $825 billion profit. Now, just think about that for a minute. If they just took $1 billion of their 2011 profit, they could flip the U.S. presidential election. If they just took maybe a, well, probably less than $1 billion, they could flip the composition of the House and Senate. And Karl Rove is out there saying to them, we'll take your money. Now, this is something I find absolutely fascinating. The DNC, the Democratic National Committee, and I, for years and years, and I continue to say, you know, we need to be infiltrating and taking over the Democratic Party. It's one of my mantras. And we need to be part of grassroots politics and organizing and participating in grassroots issues and events and things like that. And one of the reasons is that I think that the Democratic Party is not yet totally gone the way the Republican Party is. And here's one example of it. The DNC is holding their gig this year in, North Carolina, I think? South Carolina, wherever it is. North Carolina, I'm pretty sure. Charlotte, yeah. Charlotte's in North Carolina, I think. And, in fact, I'll be there. And they're not taking donations from corporations that are over, you know, a couple hundred dollars. I think it's $100 or $200. No large corporations. So they're not actually able to raise the money. They're like $10 million short of the cost of putting on this convention. And they're trying to raise it from individuals in small amounts, and they don't have the cash. And it's got them freaked out. I mean, this is a real problem. Now, the Republican Party, on the other hand, they go to ExxonMobil and say, hey, cross our palm with a couple $1 million, and we'll make sure you get laws that make you even more profitable. $825 billion last year? How about $1,000 billion? How'd you like to make $1 trillion in profits, in money left over at the end of the day? Money laying around on the floor, money in the money bin that you can dive into and swim through. Remember Scrooge McDuck? So ExxonMobil, $825 billion profit in 2011. Now, there are 365 days a year. That means they're making more than $2 billion a day, about $2.5 billion a day, which is a little over $1 billion, about every 10 hours. Which must mean that they're making about $100 million an hour, right? Because one-tenth of a billion is $100 million. So we are now in the 11th minute of the third hour of our show. And since this show started, ExxonMobil has made about $212 million, if they're keeping on track. That's pretty amazing. So anyhow, they sit on the Civil Justice Committee, the Energy Committee, the Environment Committee. They also sit on the Agriculture Committee. I find that interesting. Now, of course, most of what we eat is oil. You may not think of the food that you eat as oil, but if it wasn't for oil fueling the tractors, if it wasn't for oil being turned into pesticides and herbicides, if it wasn't for oil fueling the transportation systems that got the food to you, if it wasn't for oil being turned into plastic that the food is packaged in, if it wasn't for, but mostly the fertilizers, you know, that become the food come from oil. And if, or a lot of it, some of it does, some significant part of it. If it wasn't for oil bringing it to you and then oil powering your car to go to the store to get it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, by the end, when we add it all up, basically we're eating oil. We're living off oil. So I suppose it would make sense that ExxonMobil is writing agriculture laws for the various 50 states. And they're also on the Tax and Fiscal Policy Committee. You think that might have something to do with why they can make hundreds of billions of dollars in profits and pay no U.S. federal income taxes? Maybe. Let me just, Altria Client Services, Amazon.com is on this list. They're a member of ALEC. Might want to let them know if you're a customer. Anheuser-Busch, do you drink beer? They're on the Commerce. Anheuser-Busch is on the Commerce, Insurance, Economic Development, Tax and Fiscal Policy Task Forces. AOL, which I think now owns the Huffington Post, right? They're on the Tax and Fiscal Policy Task Force. They're on the Communications and Technology Task Force. I wonder if we could get them to remove themselves via the Huffington Post, or if we would get blowback from on that. AT&T, of course, is an ALEC member. AT&T's service in Washington, D.C., their telephone service, the data service on my phone is so slow, it is scary. It's like, you know, this goes back to Reagan not enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act. Jimmy Carter, Jerry Ford and Jimmy Carter broke up AT&T, and then Reagan let them come back together again. Bank of America, Bayer, why do we have a German company? This German company is writing laws for the various states in the areas of civil justice. They're on the Civil Justice Task Force. They're on the Energy Task Force. They're on the Environment Task Force. They're on the Agriculture Task Force. They're on the Health and Human Services Task Force. And they're based in Leverkusen, Germany. Why is that? Why is it that a German company is writing laws for Michigan and Wisconsin and California and New York? What's going on here?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'll tell you what's going on here. You can sum it up in one word. It's called oligarchy. Rule by the wealthy. Okay, this is interesting. Consider this. This free radical in our chat room says, for God's sake, Tom, stop perpetuating the myth and stereotype that African-Americans and Latino-Americans do not support marriage equality. That was a lying ruse promulgated by National Organization for Marriage, who was trying to drive a wedge between the LGBT community and communities of color. It was never true. I love you to death, Tom, but you can't imagine the damage you're doing by repeating this nonsense. Well, that's interesting. I would like to see some evidence of that, free radical, because my understanding is that Hispanic communities are very, very Catholic, and the Catholic Church is outspokenly opposed to gay marriage, and that African-American communities have traditionally been very wary of gay people in their midst. And externally, and that, although maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I would be the first to admit it if I was wrong. So send me some evidence. Give me a link. Let me check it out. Stephen in Tampa, Florida. Hey, Stephen, listening on AM.
Tom, how you doing, buddy?
9:40.
Hey, how are you, Tom? I might donate enough money to Free Speech TV just to have the dinner with you, because I'd love to sit down and argue with you for an hour.
Okay. You wouldn't be the first.
Yeah, I know. Before the news break with the lady down in the basement of the White House,
mm-hmm.
you were talking about how President Obama, Biden was running off of the mouth and kind of getting Obama in trouble, and there's no leadership in the White House.
I'm saying I don't think that that's the case. I don't think the White House is that incompetent. I think that when Joe Biden said that on Meet the Press, that the White House knew he was going to say it, and that what they're setting up is the ability of President Obama, or they're at least trial running it, the ability of President Obama to come out in favor of marriage equality before the election.
And that's where we disagree, is I don't believe he will. He hasn't done anything. In my opinion,
He's done a lot, actually. He stopped defending DOMA. I mean, he ended Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He's done a number of things to help the gay community. Very substantial things.
I disagree. DOMA, getting rid of DOMA was like, was a complete paper bag. I mean, he didn't do it. Okay, so you got rid of DOMA. So now people who are in the military can say that they are gay. However, if a person is with someone, and they die fighting for our country, they get no benefits. They don't have marriage rights. Gets nothing. So in reality, to me, whoop-de-doo. So now homosexuals can now say, hey, I'm gay. Big deal. That's nothing. You know, give the people, you know, equal rights. To me, I had a meeting with my aunt this weekend who's a staunch conservative, and the first words out of her mouth was, how's your buddy doing? You know, because I was really hardcore pushing Obama, right? Mm-hmm. And I've slacked off now. I'm not a supporter any longer. Mm-hmm. And so my first words to her was, you should be the happiest person in the world because he is the greatest conservative president to ever live. Yeah. He's cut your taxes more than anyone ever has. He's done nothing progressive in his whole time in office. And so I know that we're all supposed to get behind them, right? But there's a reason why the DNC isn't able to raise the money. There's a reason, okay? And it's not because Republicans are getting their money from corporations.
Stephen, let me just, you know, this is you're following a script here that I found over at the RNC about how to call a talk show. And I'm curious, you're in the 352 area code. Where is that?
It's in Gainesville. I listen to you out of Tampa. Listen, I call you all the time. What are you talking about?
Okay. I'm just, you know, it's just the strategy that the RNC is suggesting that people call progressive radio stations and say, you know, I used to like Obama, but I don't now. It's such a great and effective way to suppress the vote. So, you know, this, 6164, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'll check back with you later.
I'm going to give you the whole number on the air.
No. I'll check back with you. Thank you, Stephen, for the call. I'm skeptical. Color me skeptical. I know that there are many Democrats and progressives who are not happy with the president. But do you really want Mitt Romney as president? Do you really want two more right wingers on the Supreme Court? Is that really where you're going to go? I don't think so. Andy in Kansas City, Missouri. Hey, Andy, what's up?
The first answer is no.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right. The second thing is we didn't privatize the prisons. We corporatized the prison.
You're right.
So we need to eliminate the word privatization and use it as corporatization.
Yes, or profitization is another way to say it. Yeah,
yes.
I don't disagree with you.
The other thing that I wanted to comment on was that I think I figured out a way to beat K Street at their own games.
Mm-hmm.
With the telecommunications that we have today, there's no reason that our congressmen and our senators can't be in their home districts and vote from their home districts. And that way, when they go out to lunch with the people from K Street, all their constituents are going to see who they're having lunch with. And then once a month, they can go back to Washington, D.C. and do whatever they need to do for that one day a month.
Yeah, I just want to bring back that old Wisconsin law that says that no corporation shall spend any money of any form in any way, no agent of any corporation, to influence legislation of any kind. And if they do, the officer or attorney or representative goes to jail for up to 5 years, and the corporation is dissolved. And I just bring me back that old law. The problem is that the Supreme Court has said such laws are unconstitutional.
Exactly.
And by saying that, what the Supreme Court has done is, you know, just blown up this whole thing. I mean, they have ruined the ability of the American people to have control over their own body politic. And all the more the tragedy. Ken, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back in just a few minutes. I'm not sure I want to get into this whole issue of how do you call into a talk radio show and trash somebody by praising them faintly. But I find the phenomena fascinating, and the how to call a talk show over at the RNC website fascinating. I'm going to have to track
that
down.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Devo says, address the critique, Tom, not the caller. Okay, right after the break, I'll do that. We'll be right back. That's the good, the bad, and the very, very Toronto-phobically ugly, the good. Gregory Burns. Burns is the director of Emory University's Center for Neuropolicy. He's trying to unlock one of the greatest secrets known to man, which is, what the heck is man's best friend thinking? By training dogs to sit perfectly still, Burns is for the first time performing MRI scans on dogs that are awake, measuring what parts of their brains are being stimulated in response to certain human interactions. Studies will reveal likely just how much human language dogs do understand and just how aware dogs are of their owner's emotions. Now, only if we could get the same sort of research done on pigeons. The bad. North Carolina Republicans. Four different Republican politicians in the state have gone full-on birther. The latest is Dr. John Whitley, running for a congressional seat in the state's 8th District, who called President Obama's birth certificate a poorly reproduced forgery. Dr. Whitley went on to say, quote, "There is a tremendous amount of smoke here. In fact, it's called a smoke screen," end quote. I, on the other hand, call that blatant racism. And the very, very ugly multimillionaire Congressman Paul Ryan. At a town hall meeting last Friday, Representative Ryan was asked point blank by a constituent if he supports closing corporate tax loopholes to prevent student loan interest rates from increasing. Ryan's simple answer was, nope. While this shouldn't surprise most political observers who've studied the Republican agenda over the last year, it is telling that the top budget maker in Congress would rather preserve unfair tax breaks for transnational oil corporations like ExxonMobil, the most profitable corporation in the history of planet Earth, rather than make sure that the next generation of America's young people are not saddled with debt. Some might call this heartless. Some might call it flat-out economically stupid. Others might call it selfish, given that Ryan is a multimillionaire himself, and he seems to care only about other millionaires. I just call it very, very ugly. Yeah, there we go. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number, Joe in Albuquerque. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. Sure. I'm calling because I disagree with the gentleman who called you earlier and said that he didn't think that canceling Don't Ask, Don't Tell was very important to the gay population, their movement.
Yeah.
And basically, I guess I don't think he's really thought that through, and he hasn't seen the big picture there.
No, the script that this guy is running off is that what you do is whatever the topic is that's being discussed, if it's on progressive talk radio, you call up and you say, okay, apropos of that topic, I used to support the president, but he hasn't done enough, and so I don't support him anymore, and I'm not going to vote for him. And the goal is to get as many people as possible listening to progressive talk radio or other media, because you'll find these messages constantly posted on progressive message boards, and particularly in any kind of progressive articles or whatever, to drive down the base, to drive down the vote. On the progressive side, there should be somebody posting messages on, right-wing websites going, oh, that Mitt Romney, I'm a good Republican, but I'm not sure that I can vote for a Mormon, or I'm not sure that I could vote for a flip-flopper or whatever. But I don't know of any organized efforts to do that on the Democratic side. But they do exist on the Republican side. Pardon my interrupting you.
I see. Well, yeah. So I suppose he got me then.
Well, I think so. I might be wrong. It might be that he genuinely believes that Don't Ask, Don't Tell, eliminating Don't Ask, Don't Tell, didn't do jack. But so based on that assumption, based on the assumption that he was a genuine caller, let's toss it back to you, and you can tell us why that was a big deal, what President did for gays.
Yes, actually, in my opinion, I think it was probably just as important as when the Psychiatric Association, moved the condition of homosexuality from being an actual illness or
right.
disease.
Right, when they took it out of the DSM 2 or 3, whatever it was, yeah.
Right, exactly. So I recently, about a year ago, completed an MBA, and one of the things that we learn in marketing classes is how important it is to get a message out. And when you think of all the conservative people that are joining the military or going to the military or otherwise have family members in the military, when they have this sensitivity training about don't ask, don't tell not being the issue anymore, and that they have to accept and understand that there are gay people serving in the military, and they have the right to be respected and accepted as their teammates, and their subordinates and their superiors at all levels of the military, then there's going to be some respect that's generated out of that. And when they take those messages and those attitudes back into the heartland of America, the middle parts of America, then that's going to grow, and that's going to get, it's going to start seeping into the cracks, as it were. And in my opinion, that's going to do enormous, amazing things for the gay culture and the gay effort to be more accepted by this country. But there's a lot of Christian conservatives that I believe a lot of attitudes will change when they realize that the person watching their back in the foxhole was a gay man, and he protected them as well, if not better than anyone else that they could have ever wanted there. That when they realize that gay people are just the same as anyone else, eating and breathing and sleeping.
Well, and this is what happened after, I believe it was Harry Truman integrated the army. I mean,
exactly.
People. You know, the military became one of the most progressive organizations, institutions in the United States, and it changed a generation of attitude of white people toward African Americans who came out of the military after having served collaboratively with them and started standing up in favor of civil rights laws, which, you know, then a generation later changed. So, I think it's a big deal. I really do. Thank you very much for the call, Joe. I appreciate it. And thanks for listening to KABQ. Tasha in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Tasha. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, how are you? I just wanted to make a response regarding the caller that called and told you that he basically felt it was unfair for you to say that African-American and Latino families, people should not, that we don't talk against gays.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking from a lesbian, an African-American lesbian, I could tell you that it is true that it is very hard to be an African-American person in an African-American family. I come from an all-Christian family who do not believe in gay marriage, and I'm not saying that all African-American families or Latino families are this way, but the majority of them are. Mm-hmm. And as a black person in America, I could tell you the views of gay marriage or gayness is looked upon as the worst thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to put that out, and I believe that's why Obama has a hard time addressing this issue, because he's aware of that as well.
Sure.
So that's
And these are two core constituencies that he has to carry in overwhelming quantities if he's going to win the presidency, is the African-American vote and the Latino vote. And the Latino vote out of their Catholicism, the African-American vote out of, I'm not sure, I think probably years and years of the church being the only center of community, because all other centers of community were ripped away from African-Americans during the, hundreds of years of apartheid and then hundreds of years before that of slavery, this situation, this attitude exists. Do you have any theories, Tasha, on why the African-American community is so intolerant of gays?
They feel it's a sin.
Just fundamentalist Christianity.
Right. For instance, my mother, she's an evangelist. I come from that type of family, and they just, they go quoting scriptures in the Bible. They feel it's the ultimate sin, and where does that come from? The lack to, reproduce, even though I have a child.
Right.
I feel sorry for us as gay people. Like my partner, she wants to get married, she wants to have this big wedding, and I had to tell her, hon, who would even come? I mean, first,
because you're both black,
we're gay, and we're black. I mean, let's be real about what that struggle is for us.
The face of the gay movement has been, by and large, white.
And I feel as gay people in general, we need to start talking about racism within our own community and how we are divided. And I feel before we can even talk about marriage equality, we need to talk about equality of all within the gay community.
Yeah, there's racism within the gay community, as there is in every community, and there's homophobia within the black community, as there is within every community, and both need to be called out, and we need to clean all this stuff up, right?
I agree with you.
Okay, Tasha, thank you so much. And
thank you.
Thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. Christine in Arista, New Mexico. Hey, Christine, what's up?
I'm waiting.
Okay, so what's on your mind?
Someone has answered the phone. I'm an 89-year-old black woman, and as you know, the black schools, I came up in separate schools.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the black schools were all named for famous black people.
Mm-hmm.
when I was a junior in high school, I went to a school in Parker City, Oklahoma, called Addicts High School. I was told that it was named for Crispus Addicts, who was the first man who fell in the Revolutionary War.
And he was African-American.
I've heard Tea Party all since I've been listening to Tom Hartman, and I've never heard Crispus Addicts' name called.
Mm-hmm.
He supposedly was the forerunner or the founder of the Tea Party.
Hmm. I can't certify that. The Tea Party, the original Tea Party in 1773, to this day, I don't think anybody knows who was really the leader of that. But let me check about Crispus Atticus and find out more. I'll get back with you on that, Christine. Thank
you
for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more. It's 45 minutes past the hour. More of your calls right after this.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Joe in Raleigh, North Carolina, with a big reminder of what's coming up in North Carolina tomorrow. Hey, Joe, welcome.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for
what's
for
coming
joining
up tomorrow is tomorrow's election day, and we are voting against Amendment 1. This was an attempt by our local Republicans to incorporate discrimination and homophobia into our state constitution. One of the things I've done recently is I drive around a lot. That's part of my job description, and I've seen a lot of signs saying vote against Amendment 1, but I live in Raleigh, north of Chapel Hill, the kind of liberal progressive area of the state.
Mm-hmm.
But recently, this weekend, I took a trip out to the western part of the state, which has a tendency to be much more conservative, and I was really surprised and encouraged by the number of anti-Amendment 1 signs I've seen out there. So I think we really have a chance to turn this corner, be the first southern state to really knock this down going against our state constitution.
Let's hope so. And I think that what this is illustrating is the reality, the increasing reality that as there's less of a penalty associated with being out if you're gay, that more and more people are coming out. And in fact, there are some benefits of community that are associated with it. And as more and more people come out, more and more people are discovering that, oh, hey, you know, one of my kids or one of my nieces or one of my nephews or one of my uncles or, you know, fill in the blank, right? Somebody in my family is gay and or lesbian or transgender, whatever it may be. And as a consequence of that, people are going, oh, we're all just like, you know, we're all in this together. And that's when the breakthrough happens, and that needs to be happening across all the various communities in America. But Joe, we'll see how it goes. And thanks for the reminder that tomorrow is Election Day in North Carolina. People need to get out and vote against Proposition or Ballot Measure 1. Caleb in Portland. Hey, Caleb, what's up? Thanks for listening to KPOJ.
First of all, Tom, I love your suspicion of the fellow that's saying, oh, I used to support Obama, but now I'm not so sure. Good for you for being sensitive.
Well, my point was if he was a genuine progressive, he would have trashed Obama much more rigorously.
Yeah,
you know?
But
it's that damning with faint praise that the Republicans recommend you do, you know, and that's why I was... Anyway, go for
it. And the perfect of the enemy of the good. You know, I don't know if you had a chance to look at Rachel Maddow's chart, charting the wealth inequality and the gridlock in Congress. Have you seen that chart?
I have not. I have not watched MSNBC in several weeks.
I just haven't had a
circumstance.
I highlighted the chart on the community there, but it's a terrific chart. I mean, it parallels perfectly. That is, the greater the wealth disparity, the more the gridlock in Congress. And it sure makes sense because the Republicans are bought and paid for completely.
Yeah. Well, and all they've been doing ever since Obama came into office is blocking everything he tries to do. And this has been the strategy that Mitch McConnell laid out the day after the president was elected, is we are going to make him a one-term president. And how do you do that? You do that by blocking any possibility of his having any accomplishments. Of
any jobs, anything, any help to the people.
And anything that he does do, like, for example, the Obamacare, you force it to be enough of a compromise that there are elements of his base who are going, hey, you know, we didn't even get a public option, and we wanted single payer. I'm gonna go sit in my corner with my ball and suck my thumb.
Right, and the stimulus package too. I mean, I agree with you utterly.
And so it's just, you know, it's an unfortunate thing.
Look at that chart when you get a chance.
Yeah, I'll check it out. Thanks a lot for the call, Caleb. I appreciate it. Josh in Portland. Hey, Josh, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. Before I get to my question, I just wanted to thank you for your metaphor a couple weeks ago on comparing your burning house being put out with tax dollars to your burning body. I got two of my conservative coworkers to tell me that I've got a point, and they've never heard a put like that. My
job
fell to the floor. But my question is, you mentioned earlier all the transnational corporations that are part of ALEC. What I wanted to know is if there's any of these big American corporations that are pushing legislation in other countries.
I can tell you that, and I wrote about this in my book on equal protection back, you know, 10 years ago, that when South Africa wrote their constitution, several large American corporations, and I'm not going to name them off the top of my head because I might get them wrong, but I think that I'm pretty sure that they're named in the book, or at least footnoted, several American corporations donated legal services to South Africa and, you know, went over and helped them write their constitution, and they wrote corporate personhood into their constitution. So, American corporations, transnational corporations are not without influence in countries all over the world. It's not limited to the United States. I don't know that there's organization like ALEC.
Let's go to the topic of unequal protection, Tom.
The topic?
You were one of the first to hit on it before anybody else.
Yeah, Unequal Protection is a book that when I started writing it, we had just moved into this house in Vermont where It was built in 1851, and in the attic, in the carriage house above the attic, I found this collection, this 20-volume collection of the collected writings of Thomas Jefferson that was published in 1909, you know, in the anniversary, 1908, the anniversary of the end of his first presidency and the 100 year. And I read it, and it took, you know, like a year and a half to read it, and I set out to write a book about Jeffersonian democracy and how America had changed since his presidency. And in 1886, I came up against this decision, the Santa Clara decision. And in researching that, I discovered that the Supreme Court did not rule in Santa Clara County that corporations are persons, that the clerk merely said they ruled to that effect. And the whole thing has been built on a lie ever since. And so, you know, that caused the book to take a huge turn in another direction. And it ended up being Unequal Protection, How Corporations Became People, rather than, you know, What Would Jefferson Do, which I then wrote as my next book, which literally is titled What Would Jefferson Do?
Phenomenal work, Tom. You're great at what you do, and God bless you and Louise. Thank you for your program.
Thank you, Josh, and thanks for your kind words. So step by step, we'll get there. We'll all get there as long as we stick together in this, right? Coming up tomorrow, how CISPA can make your right to Internet privacy a thing of the past. And why conservatives are just fine with that. We'll talk with Stephen Busey of the Heritage Foundation. Plus, the best of the rest of the news and your calls. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up and participate. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.